Dispatches from Death Row by Mumia Abu-Jamal from Prison Radio. This is Tom Morello and Serge Tankian interview Mumia on Axis of Justice Radio. It was aired late last month. So you stay tuned. This is KBOO Portland.
You're listening to the Axis of Justice Radio Network. This is Serge Tankian.
I'm Tom Morello. And now we have the privilege to be able to interview Mumia Abu-Jamal from Death Row, live from Death Row. Mumia Abu-Jamal is an author, activist, award-winning radio journalist, former member of the Black Panther Party, and a political prisoner who's been on Death Row for nearly 25 years. His books, Live from Death Row, Death Blossoms, All Things Censored, Faith of Our Fathers, and the recently released We Want Freedom, have sold over 150,000 copies worldwide and have been translated into 7 languages. His 1982 murder trial and subsequent conviction have been the subject of great debate. While fighting for his life and his freedom, Mumia manages to educate and inspire millions with his words, insight, and passion. Mumia Abu-Jamal is now calling from Death Row. Mumia, welcome to the Axis of Justice Radio Network.
How are you, man?
Mumia, this is Tom Morello.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, man?
And Serge, how's it going, Mumia?
Hey, Serge.
Welcome to the Axis of Justice Radio Network. We'll get right into it because I know that our time is limited.
Absolutely.
Okay. There are now more than 2 million people behind bars in the American prison system. Looking at the prison population, what can we learn about race and class exploitation in the United States?
Well, prison is kind of a microcosm of what's happening in the larger so-called free world. I mean, I hesitate to use those words because, you know, when you look at how people really live in the so-called free world, the question arises, how free are they? You know, what kind of freedoms do they have? I'm reminded of the French saying about, you know, the freedom that poor people have to beg under bridge and to essentially starve.
Mm-hmm.
And we live really, I think, in a what I like to call, especially when I write about it, the prison house of nations. You know, this is like 6 to 7% of the world's population live in the United States. 25% of all the prisoners on Earth are in U.S. prisons right now.
Hmm. What do you see as the role of art, in particular music, in social justice movements?
Art can be pivotal. And by that I mean not just like commercial art. I'm talking about popular art. And mm-hmm. When you think about social movements, like the civil rights movement, the Black Liberation Movement, the women's movement, when you actually think back to those movements, there were people marching.
This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording.
There were people who were marching and singing, you know, as they were marching. And it gave them a sense of unity. It also gave a lot of people in times of real state terrorism courage. It fueled movements in many ways. I mean, you think about the spirituals that were sung in churches just before people, you know, went out on the Selma Pettus Bridge, for example. Art can be a reviving force, a liberating force, a freeing force, a force for courage. Of course, you know, I'm not talking about commercial art here.
Right.
I'm talking about popular art, you know.
What contemporary social movements in the United States do you find particularly inspiring?
That sounds like a loaded question from my perspective.
Well,
you know, we can talk about the absence of movements, right?
Yeah, right. Please be candid.
Well, let's be real. I mean, I think that right now, with very few exceptions, say, for example, the SOA people, the people who organize against the School of Assassins, most people in this culture, in this country, at this time, are mobilized, paralyzed by fear. They're afraid of being targeted. They're afraid of being wiretapped. They're afraid of being called, say, terrorists or enemy combatants by the government. And in many ways, they are right to be afraid. In one sense, because this government is kind of crazy. It will do those kinds of things. But the other side of the coin, of course, is no matter what you do, right, things are only going to get progressively worse unless people organize and protest and gather and speak what's in their hearts, what's in their minds about this extraordinary time in American history.
all the writings and radio commentaries over the years, both in and out of prison, is there one that stands out as your favorite, one that you'd be most proud of?
Well, at the risk of sounding modest, I'm kind of proud of all of them. But there were some that kind of touched me. The one about Manny, the guy I saw that was almost dying. He was the ex-boxer, built like a little fire plug. That moves me. And the mother in Philadelphia who came home to find her house destroyed by the city, that moved me. And, you know, really, when I guess when I talk about regular people, that's what moves me, because you feel that, you know, because we're all regular people.
Let's shift gears for a second. What's your analysis of what's transpiring in Iraq 3 years after the U.S. invasion?
It's the worst of all possible worlds in many ways. Mm-hmm. It certainly, I think any sane person looking at that situation would say Iraq is hell for the Iraqi people. I just finished reading a book by Robert Fisk from the Independent newspaper in London, The Great War for Civilization. One cannot read that and not see from the beginning to end, and we're nearing some kind of an end, disaster, sheer disaster. You have to go back almost a century and beyond for when some guys in a room in Vienna drew up the false borders of Iraq. And then when you look at what's happening now, to see Shia versus Sunni and Kurd and so forth, I think we're looking at a pre-civil war, if not the low grade of a civil war right now.
Right.
I mean, how many hundreds of people have to die before you say this is a civil war? Is there a kind of number?
And the Shiites have been holding back based on a lot of working with the administration and trying to run the majority of parliament and the government with all the attacks that have been placed against them from the jihadists and stuff. If that breaks out, it's going to be complete civil war, I think.
Well, they have been holding back because, you know, they can count. They know what time it is. They know that this is their hour. This is their moment. Mm-hmm. But with the attack on the Al-Asghari Mosque, Shiite holy place, several weeks ago, to use a real ugly phrase, the gloves have come off in many ways. I don't see a good end. Well, it didn't begin well.
This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording.
I was about to say, because it began so badly, it can only end badly. No politician can really claim otherwise. Mm-hmm. Not any with a brain, I think.
What do you propose people in the United States do in response to the Iraq war, and how to inspire a mass anti-war movement that can even maybe move beyond being an anti-war movement?
Well, I think you know, Americans are notorious for short memories, and I think if people are reminded about February and March of 2003, when larger demonstrations took place in dozens of cities all across the United States and all around the world, but millions of Americans put their feet to the pavement, you remind them that they were right. I mean, they know that in their hearts. Even the New York Times had to say that this was another superpower, the power of the people. And people need to be reminded so that they can kind of gain strength from that and not fall for a depressing dismissal of the news. There are millions of people, when the news comes on, they just turn away because it's so ugly. But that's not the right solution. People need to organize. And I think if people come together and protest again about this war, people will learn that they can come together for other social issues, because it's all related in many ways.
Although the power of corporate capitalism threatens to overwhelm the globe, a number of Latin American countries recently have elected populist socialist governments. Do you think that these governments can have a positive effect on global politics?
Well, they can if they're not bought off or intimidated.
That's what I was thinking.
There was an article in the New York Times recently about the confessions of an economic hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy essentially told how he would go to world leaders and offer them like a satchel full of money or a bullet. It was like, it's your choice. That's kind of gross. But in many ways, with the IMF, with the CIA, with the U.S. government, with the, you know, the crazy State Department, those things really happen. I mean, anyone who knows an inkling of the history of Latin America knows that many governments, like Chile, for example, under Pinochet, these governments were in the pocket of Western capital. They were paid to wage repression against their own people. I think what we're looking at right now is a kind of breath of fresh air coming from the South, coming from Latin America. If people understand what can happen, they can organize against media attacks, IMF attacks, and even military attacks from the government, which are real possibilities.
Mumia, what are your reflections on Hurricane Katrina and what it exposed about race and class in America?
My first impression, strange as it may seem, was sheer disbelief. I mean, not at the power of nature, not at the power of the waters or the winds, but at the long, long days of suffering of people, you know, stranded on rooftops or left on their own, you know. You had to ask questions about, is this America? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are these people what we can call Americans? Well, theoretically, they're born in America. Mm-hmm. They have American citizenship. And I was reminded of the great Nigerian African writer, Wole Soyinka, who said, when is a nation? This is his poetic voice. And it essentially asks, what is a nation? When are you a part of a nation? Because it looked as if we were looking at something that was happening in another country, in another time. The truth of the matter is, it was right here in the United States. It was happening now. And in fact, it's still happening. Katrina is not one day, one storm, one hurricane, one destruction of the levee situation. Katrina is happening right now when people can't find housing. Many people we don't hear about who are homeless, who are still homeless from that situation. People being kicked out of hotels. There are some people who still have not found their family members from a year ago. It's crazy. It was, I think, an eye-opening, soul-opening, mind-opening moment. And I hope people really opened their eyes and saw and tried to feel what was happening. It says much more about the rest of America than about New Orleans or Louisiana or about a certain hurricane by the name of Katrina.
In our travels, Mumia, around the globe, touring with Rage and then Audioslave and System of Down as well, we just want to let you know what an undying inspiration you are for people throughout the country and throughout the world. It's really impressive. I mean, there's plenty of 2005, 2006 graffiti, Free Mumia, on Italian walls and Spanish walls and mm-hmm. Israeli walls. You should know that you are in people's minds and in people's hearts. The question I have for you is, what gives you hope? How do you manage to remain so full of life given the conditions on death row?
It's no thanks to the conditions on death row, I should tell you.
Yeah.
Years ago, as a very young person,
You have 1 minute left to talk.
When I heard about the struggles of the people of the world, I mean, they entered my heart. Mm-hmm. They became part of me, and they remain part of me today. I love people. And I love to hear that, you know, people support me and care about me in places like you mentioned. So it's reciprocal. You know, love is a circle. It ain't a box.
Well, we'd like to thank you so much. Apparently, we're going to be cut off very soon.
But welcome to the real world.
Yeah, I know. But stay strong, my brother. You are in our thoughts, and you continue to be an inspiration to us and our radio show as well. We appreciate your efforts. Are there any new books coming up soon?
I'm working on one.
You have 15 seconds left to talk.
I'm working on one on jailhouse lawyers, so I'll let you know how.
Nice. Thanks, brother.
On the move, y'all.
Yeah, take care, Mumia. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank y'all.
Okay, peace.
We'd like to thank our guest, Mumia Abu-Jamal, political prisoner, for being on the show.
And so our interview with Mumia Abu-Jamal ends rather abruptly. But we'd like to thank Mumia so much for calling the Axis of Justice Radio Network, as he only gets 3 15-minute phone calls a week, and he used one of them to be on the air with us today. And now a brief update on Mumia's case. Though still on death row, in January of 2006, the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, Philadelphia, ruled that there were three issues on which Mumia's rights may have been violated in his original trial: prosecutorial bias, judicial bias, and jury selection. The prosecution and the defense will now enter an extensive period of briefs to the court that should last through the spring. This is positive news, and it could be the first steps towards a new trial and freedom for Mumia. This is, however, a case that has been tried not only in the courts throughout its history, but also in the streets. And to continue to push for a new trial, a new and fair trial for Mumia, is something that we're all going to work towards. You can learn more about his case at accessofjustice.org. I am Tom Morello of Audioslave.
I'm Serge Tunkin.
Good afternoon, good afternoon. This is Reggae Bob back here with Prison Pipeline. Glad to be here, glad to be here. Hey, sorry, a little late. Things change, got to keep on it. Okay, out here surviving, that's what we got to do. Okay, we just got so many things to mention tonight. We're going to jump right into it. This show is dedicated for, about, and because of prisons, prisoners, their rights, their justice, their injustice, their freedoms, their unfreedom, and their families. And first of all, I want to shout out right now to Uhuru Sasa. I bumped up on my certificate from a couple of years ago. Thank you again, and everybody on lockdown. First, let you know there's a movie showing that I saw myself live and in color last night called Shakespeare Behind Bars. Shakespeare Behind Bars. And I'm just going to read it out here real quick. 20 male inmates in a Kentucky prison form an unlikely Shakespearean acting troupe in their documentary, which was nominated for a grand jury prize at the Sundance Film Festival. And it unexpectedly delightful, heart-stirring chronicle that follows the casting, rehearsal, and presentation of Shakespeare's play The Tempest by convicted felons inside Kentucky's Luther Luckett Correctional Complex. And it is just what it said. Didn't exactly see how it got started, but it said it had been going on for 6 or 7 years there. And it's a group of gentlemen, convicts behind bars, all male prison. So the female part was played by a gentleman, and he was good too. They all chuckled about that. And full of passion and power, that the men share their lives. They talk about what they did to get there, the mistakes they made along the way, and apologizing and wasn't doing no begging. They were serving their time, and they were doing Shakespeare. They also showed them taking numerous computer classes and other things that they do to prepare themselves to get ready for their release, because once they get out of that Kentucky prison. And they showed a warden who was friendly on camera. Who knows off, but he was friendly on camera. Okay, that was that. Last night, and excuse me, that film is still showing, y'all. Sorry, still the film is still showing. It's got today's the 18th. Got 18th, 19th, 20th is the last day. It's showing at Cinema 21, and the address is 616 Northwest 21st Avenue. 616 Northwest 21st Avenue. That movie, that documentary, is called Shakespeare Behind Bars, and it's something else. It is something else. Okay, announcement. We have here. Starting this weekend, going to be 3 weekends in a row, 3 different locations. And it's a benefit for Big Brothers, Big Sisters program. And as folks have been on the show a couple of times, for children of incarcerated parents, Big Brothers, Big Sisters working hard. And they have some fundraisers coming up. What they're doing is they're bowling for kids' sake. It's easy and fun to make a difference for children in our community. The money raised goes directly towards matching children with Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and big couples who help them reach their full potential. And this weekend, April 21st and 22nd, is going to be at the Sunset Lanes in Beaverton. And you can... The next weekend, it is 20th Century. April 28, 29 is 20th Century Lanes in Portland. And the next weekend after that is going to be May 6th at the Hazeldale Lanes in Vancouver. And you can participate as a bowler, join a team, or start your own team. Each bowler raises and pledges and celebrates their success at one of the bowling parties listed above. All bowlers receive 2 free games of bowling, free shoe rental, and a commemorative T-shirt. There will also be food, beverage, and everything. Sign up today at www.bowlforkidssake2006.org. All one word spelled out just like it sounds. Bowlforkidssake2006.org. Or you can call at 503-503-503. 249-4859. 249-4859. Help the children, y'all. Help the children. Keep them good and happy and positive thinking. Keep them educated. Keep them on a good path. A good path. Good positive path. Good rewarding path. All right. Okay, that's that. Next Monday, y'all. Next Monday, I might have to go to this one and come up with a hangover. We're talking about the Taste of the Nation. This thing is put on by the Sisters of the Road. Excuse me. It's benefited and put on by the Sisters of the Road Cafe, I believe. And other things, and other people's. It says, share our strengths, Taste of the Nation. Help fill Oregon's empty plates. Share your strength in the fight against hunger. Taste of the Nation brings Oregon's most celebrated chefs and beverage purveyors for an evening unlike any other. Over 60 of Oregon's top torques raise a glass with the craft brewers' amazing silent auction, live entertainment, fight hunger with taste. Okay, here's how it goes. 100% of ticket sales and auction proceeds benefit the fight to end hunger. The largest nationwide culinary benefit supporting anti-hunger is going to be this coming Monday, April 24th, at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. General admission, prices, things like that, they're all here listed here. And yes, we got a website. Oh, excuse me, it's a 21 and over affair. So, you know, got to be over 21. But to order the tickets or for more information, visit at www.portlandtaste.org. That is portlandtaste.org. Or you can call 503-222-4644. Got a busy man behind me here. Big up. Big up, I told you. And those are some of the things that are happening coming up this weekend. And like I said, glad that I'm able to make it in here. Next week is Ruth Kovich. Ruth Kovich, she's going to come in. And I'm going to get her name real good. She was one of the volunteers who worked with Ann Rose Pierce on Ann's projects over the many, many years. And Ruth is going to be here next week in the big chair. So y'all listen up. Listen to Ruth next week. She will have some definite insight and happenings of things that are going on for sure. So please listen up once again next week. Okay, I got one story that I read about and just amazing. And if you're a prisoner on lockdown, if you are, and it has some years and years to go, if you are a lawyer with a client that's got years and years to go, and if you're a family member, a loved one who has somebody in jail, or excuse me, in prison, and has many, many years to go, well, this story is something to think about. Leonard Brown is his name. Leonard Brown left when his daughter was 2 years old, and she's an adult now with a daughter of her own. While Brown has spent the past 24 years in prison, he has missed his brother's funeral and his sister's too. Brown is 47 years old now. He is expected, and he did. He walked out the front door of the Hillsborough County Courthouse today, a free man, about 10 years too late. I say again, about 10 years too late. Because what happened was, in 1982, the judge sentenced Brown to 99 years in prison for a crime that allowed only a maximum of 15 years. And last year, a fellow inmate who once worked for a law firm checked that out, discovered the error while reviewing Brown's files. Brown's Tampa attorney said he doesn't deny that Brown committed the crime, but he won't say that Brown was wrongly sent to prison, but the punishment, he said, does not fit. And they blame a clerical error. I repeat, a clerical error that led the judge to think that Brown had committed a more serious crime. So the judge didn't know what he was reading when he was putting down the sentence for the man he put in jail for 99 years, where he had a maximum of only 15. So, all right. And that's from an inmate who used to be working for a law firm. He read the files, and prisoners, you know, you can read your files. You know, you can get your files, and if you see something in there that needs to be checked out, let them know. Let your family know. Let others know. See if you can get some help, please. We give you strength and help from this side. Brown, Leonard Brown is his name there in Florida. Brown says he's not angry. He's eager to go home. It feels kind of funny, he said. You're reborn. It's like a new baby learning how to crawl or to take a first step. So that story, Leonard Brown, y'all. Leonard Brown, you know, I hope didn't see the end of it. Hopefully they financially compensated him for, you know, getting that extra time that wasn't deserved 10 years too late. So if you want to read about him or check him out or send him a big up, this story here came from the Metro News in Florida. Metro News in Tampa, Florida. Okay, like that. Okay, a little short version from me this week, but hey, we do what we can here at the Volunteer Friendly Boo. Got the conference happening and things. I think we have some superstar reggae coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We got Itel Vibes is going to come down and spin it up for you. Is that right, Itel Vibes? Yeah. You got the show?
Yeah.
Itel Vibes coming up, and he knows what he's doing, and he'll introduce himself in just a little bit. And, okay, once again, we're going to mention the things that are coming up next couple of days. We mentioned bowling for... One more thing. One more big, beautiful thing. And we'll talk about it a little bit more as it gets a little closer. As you know, K-Boo's got the many hookups with lots of people. Girl Scouts Behind Bars. Excuse me. That's not the name of it. The name of it is, Girl Scouts Behind Bars program with the Girl Scouts. And there's a movie been made. It's going to be shown next month, May 23rd. And it's going to be Tuesday, May 23rd. Oh, my gosh, I'm out of town again. But, hey, that's all right. You can be there. And when it gets closer, we'll tell you about it. This is Prison Pipeline. We will be back again next week. Your host next week will be the wonderful Ruth. And she will put it down for you. Itel Vibes up next. He'll let you know what he's doing. Thank you for being here very, very much. Also, things to do. Taste of the Nation. Help feed the hungry. 100% of the ticket sales goes to fight hunger. That's next Monday, April 24th. Website, www.portlandtaste.org. You can call 503-222-4644. And the bowling situation. Yes, you want to get out and bowl for kids' sake. That's www.bowlforkidssake.org. I'm out of here. Here comes the vibe.
And got locked up. They won't let me out. They won't let me
my
out.
Visitation no longer comes by. Seems like they forgot about me. Commissary is getting empty. My cellmates eating food without me. Can't wait to get out and move forward with my life. Got a family that loves me and wants me to do right. But instead I'm here locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let go.
I'm locked up.
They won't let me out. No.
My nigga, I'm locked up.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host the National Federation of Community Broadcasters Conference in Portland this April for the first time ever. Community radio stations from around the nation will converge here for 5 days of idea sharing and creating new networks of community media. Come celebrate with us at our conference showcase event at the Doug Fir Lounge, Friday, April 21st, from 8 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. The evening will feature an international musical mix of Portland's finest local talent, including local salsa legends Conjunto Alegre, live Afrobeat from Juju Bar, as well as belly dance from Just Like Goddesses and bonger from KBOO's own DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid. For more details, visit KBOO.fm. All proceeds benefit KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO is proud to present Democracy Now!, the award-winning news and public affairs show hosted by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. Tune in weekdays at 11 a.m. following the KBOO radio zine for Democracy Now! Here on your community radio station, KBOO.